houses Vitteshu about his property Atmani about his body or Bidha by thinking in terms of duality Sarva Bhuta to all living beings Sama equal Shanta peaceful Sa he Vai indeed Bhagavata Uttama best of devotees. Translation: when a devotee gives up the selfish conception by which one thinks this is my property and that is his, and when he is no longer concerned with the pleasures of his own material body or indifferent to the discomforts of others, he becomes fully peaceful and satisfied. He considers himself simply one among all the living beings, who are equally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a satisfied Vaishnava is considered to be at the highest standard of devotional service. Purport: the vision described in the phrase Sarva Bhuta Sama, seeing all living entities equally, does not include one's vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this connection, Śrīla Madhvacārya's quote from Harivamsa as follows: Na kvapi jivam viṣṇutve samsrutta moksha eva cha. Under no circumstance should one consider the living entity equal to Lord Vishnu, either in conditional life or in liberation. The impersonal speculative philosophers are fond of imagining that although in our present illusion we appear to be individual entities, at liberation we shall merge into God and become God. Such wistful thinkers cannot reasonably explain how the omnipotent God could arrive at the embarrassing position of having to enter a yoga studio, pay weekly fees, press his nose, and chant mantras to regain his divinity. As stated in the Vedas, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kaman. The individuality or plurality of living entities is not a product of material existence. The word Nityanam, denoting the plurality of eternal entities, clearly indicates that the living entities are eternally individual parts and parcels of the Lord, who is the singular, unique entity described here as Eka. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said to Krishna, Rattam stapaya mechuta. My dear Achyuta, please place my chariot between the enemies. This body is also a ratta, a vehicle, and therefore the best policy is to request the infallible Lord to take charge of our conditional body and guide us on the path back to the kingdom of God. The word Achyuta means infallible or one who never falls. Learned or sane human beings will not entertain the silly notion that the omnipotent, omniscient God has slipped and fallen because of Maya. No amount of wishful thinking can erase our eternal servitorship at the lotus feet of the Lord. This fact is stated by the Lord Himself in Varaha Purana, Naivam Tvayanu Mantavyam Jiva Maham Iti Kvachit Sarvar Gunair Su Sampanam Daivam Mam Gyatam Arhasi. You should never think me one of the ordinary living entities in the jiva category. In fact, I am the reservoir of all opulences and godly qualities, and therefore you should understand that I am the Supreme Lord. According to Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam does not forbid using a particular object in the Lord's service, since a devotee is free to use anything favorable for serving Lord Krishna. This acceptance of favorable objects in the service of Krishna is called Yukta Vairagya. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, one should be attached for Krishna's sake, never for one's own sake. If one interprets this verse to indicate that one should not exercise control over any material object, even if it is favorable for serving Krishna, one falls into the bad understanding called Phagu Vairagya, or immature renunciation. Great kings such as Maharaj Yudhisthira and Maharaj Parikshit engaged the entire earth, and other Vaishnavas have engaged the entire universe in the service of Krishna. But they completely gave up the sense of their personal proprietorship. This is the point made in this verse. Just as one becomes very much concerned about any pain in one's own body, one should be concerned with bringing the conditioned souls to the platform of devotional service so that all of their suffering will be banished forever. That is the actual purport of not distinguishing between one body and another. When a devotee gives up the selfish conception by which one thinks this is my property and that is his, and when he is no longer concerned with the pleasure of his own material body or indifferent to the discomforts of others, he becomes fully peaceful and satisfied. He considers himself simply one among all the living beings who are equally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a satisfied Vaishnava is considered to be at the highest standard of devotional service. So, here's another verse describing the detached position of the Uttama devotee. In the previous verse, there were criticism of pride and things like that, pride in birth and in caste or varna, ashram, etc. And the Uttama was completely devoid of such identification. So, that identification also leads to attachment to properties, etc. So this verse talks about thinking that this is my property or wealth, and that is someone else's property or wealth. And so we make these distinctions. I have more than this person has, or he has more than I have, etc. So that type of conception also comes down to the fact that we have a bodily identity based on our false ego. And we're thinking in terms of oneself and in terms of body and one's own interest, which is contrary to the Vaishnava idea that I am the servant of Krishna. So obviously the Uttama devotee is fixed in being the servant of Krishna, so he's devoid completely of these conceptions of I and mine and this is mine and this is yours. And that is expanded on here by saying that sarva bhuta sama, he regards all living entities equally. And of course the purport indicates that this does not mean that the Lord also is equal, but he's in a different category. So all the jivas he regards equally in the sense that he doesn't consider himself special in any way, and that all jivas are jivas. So they're all in the same category. And therefore, he doesn't think in terms of I and mine, that I have this or you have that, because everybody is equal and nothing belongs to anybody. So all jivas are the servant of the Supreme Lord. Of course, one can always take these such verses as this and previous verse from the more impersonal point of view. And it's true that if one reaches a very high stage in jnana or yoga, one also becomes detached from bodily identity, pride, and thinking in terms of I and mine, and seeing all living entities equally. So we see such verses about the Stitta Pragya in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, for instance. So he's equal poise in all situations. Or we see chapter 5 that the person sees the elephant and the brahmana and the dog eater and the dog and whatever is all equal in one sense. So that can also apply to elevated jnanis and yogis. So in other words, not a special characteristic of the Bhagavad Gita. Nevertheless, it manifests in him as well. But there's also a little bit of a difference. And we saw that in the main definition of the Uttama devotee, in which it also says he sees everything in the Lord and the Lord in everything. So one, not only all living entities are equal because they're all jivas, but they're all equal because the Lord is in everybody, The Lord is the Paramatma. The Lord is pervading everything, not only the jivas, but the material world as well. So everything is part of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is in everything, and everything is in the Lord. So, in other words, the equality is also linked to the inconceivable power of Bhagavan, by which he pervades everything and includes everything within himself. As well, we saw that in the explanation of that verse, the primary verse describing the Uttama devotee, that the oneness was in terms of prema, that he saw everything in terms of devotion to the Supreme Lord. So even the demons are pervaded by that devotion. Somehow or other, they're also linked to the Lord and his pastimes. So therefore, when we talk about verses like this, then we can also understand that this is we can say a supporting verse to show not only that he's equal to every living entity, but he sees them all in terms of being devotees of the Lord somehow or other, even if they, from our point of view, they aren't. So in that sense, everybody is equal. Everybody's a devotee. So that's a very exalted type of position, which is unique to the great devotees and is absent in gyanis and yogis completely. If one is not on the Uttama platform, but is on the Madhyama platform, of course he does not see everything in terms of prema. He makes distinctions for his own progress. In other words, he avoids the demons and he associates with the devotees. And he preaches to the innocent people. So he doesn't have exactly the same concept. So we can say that that will distinguish the Uttama from the Madhyama. At the same time, certain aspects which are in the Uttama will start manifesting in the Madhyama as well. So here we find in this description, it talks about everybody is equal and not seeing difference between mine and his, and not being interested in one's own enjoyment, and at the exclusion of other person's enjoyment. So this also gives rise in the devotee to the sense of compassion for the living entities who are ignorant. So that is expressed by the Madhyama Adhikari, because he preaches to the innocent. He gives mercy to the innocent. So it may not be manifest in the Uttama, because he is seeing everything in terms of prema. He doesn't make any distinctions. But even there, we see that the Uttama may also make distinctions, as Narada Muni does. And then he preaches to people, and he raises them up from a fallen condition, like Mrigari the hunter. He understands he's not a devotee at all, so he makes a distinction. He's not in prema. And then he delivers him and gives him mercy, and then he advances in devotional service. So the great devotees may also be on that platform, or even Jat Bharat. Then he gave mercy to Rahugana, King Rahugana. At a certain point, he was just completely detached from everything. But then he gave up mercy to King Rahugana by his compassion or whatever. So therefore, the Uttama Adhikari is not devoid of passion, but it may be rarely displayed in some cases. The Madhyama, on the other hand, this is one of his typical characteristics, that he preaches to the innocent people and avoids the demons, etc. So he makes more distinctions. Of course, this is also because of his qualification. He's not on that highest level of seeing everything in terms of prema. So he cannot artificially see everybody in prema, because he doesn't have prema. So it's natural to make distinctions and to do what is favorable for his devotional development. So therefore, he avoids the demons. He makes the distinction between demon and devotee, avoids the demons, associates with the devotees, preaches to the innocent. So it naturally follows from the distinctions that the Madhyama Adhikari makes, naturally follow from his qualification. He's at a certain level, and it's natural that for his advancement, he must see in these terms. And he doesn't have prema, so he cannot see everything in terms of prema. In this way, the Madhyama displays some of the quality of the Uttama, but not to the highest degree, and therefore there are some distinctions also. So the Uttama is on this very high level of detachment because of his exclusive attachment to the Supreme Lord. He doesn't cultivate detachment and things like this. Rather, he has spontaneous absorption in serving the Supreme Lord. And therefore, all of these other negative qualities like pride and possessiveness, etc., cannot manifest. Because he's got nothing to do with self-interest. He's got everything to do with simply serving the Supreme Lord. So then naturally these things don't manifest. So the emphasis is upon not cultivating these qualities themselves. These qualities are simply the manifestation of his complete absorption in the Supreme Lord. So all good qualities result. We see at the beginning of bhakti, Subhada is there along with Klesha Agni. So all the bad qualities disappear. And all the good qualities appear, all the things. So he has a complete control of the senses, complete absence of all these negative, bad qualities that afflict most jivas. But it is not a cultivation, it is simply the byproduct of attraction to the Lord. In the purport, it also mentions about this I and mine. Is completely absent, but that does not mean that therefore he rejects everything. So yes, he does not think of wealth in terms of it being my wealth, but he can use that wealth for the Supreme Lord. So that is the concept of yukta vairagya. We do not simply renounce everything, but we renounce the ownership for ourselves. And then we proclaim the ownership of the Supreme Lord. So we can use all the wealth or whatever for glorification of the Supreme Lord. So there's nothing wrong with that. And rather, it's part of bhakti. And instead of creating bondage in the material world, it destroys all bondage and creates more bhakti. So therefore, and the vairagya aspect there is that it's all for the Supreme Lord. And nothing is for himself. And therefore it's called yukta vairagya. Detachment by engagement. By linking everything to the Supreme Lord. And the other type of vairagya is called falgu vairagya. Or a false vairagya. Where one renounces everything because of the danger of becoming materially attached to it. So we don't use anything for anybody. And there's no concept of engaging things in the service of the Supreme Lord at all. We just don't touch anything. So that is called falgu vairagya. Because we deny the relationship of everything with the Supreme Lord. Or we deny the existence of the Supreme Lord. So that type of renunciation is common in jnanis and yogis. They control the senses, they renounce sense objects, they renounce everything in the material world. So. The very definition of sadhana bhakti is engage the senses and engage the mind. So it's quite an opposite type of process. And the result is quite different. The result of the falgu vairagya, if they succeed, is moksha, liberation. The result of yukta vairagya is prema. Or the Bhagavad Uttama, he's completely attached to the Supreme Lord, and he realizes the Supreme Lord, and he develops the highest bliss. So we get completely different results from these two types of vairagya. So when we see these descriptions of the Uttama devotee, we cannot isolate them and think this is his quality. Simply, if someone has no attachment to wealth, etc., then he's an Uttama devotee or whatever. These are always accompanied by the fact that he's completely absorbed in the Supreme Lord. And these are the secondary qualities that result from his exalted nature of absorption in the Lord.
concept of I and mine, but actually they themselves will not be having a sort of personality, or when they merge in the Brahman, how they don't have an option of thinking that it is mine and I itself.
Well, the sadhana is to give up the concept of false ego and desires and karma, etc., etc. When all that is gone, simply there is the Atma manifesting as consciousness. That's it. It is simply consciousness.
Yeah. Consciousness is Brahman itself.
Yeah.
Then how do they, you know, it doesn't make sense for me, you know, why not think himself as a Brahman, their consciousness is still, because he's an individual, and think himself that he's a Brahman.
Well, there is an argument that this is an impossible state.
Impossible state.
Impossible.
Yeah.
That such a thing could not exist. Consciousness itself with nothing. There should be an object of consciousness. There should be an identity in consciousness. Otherwise, it doesn't have any meaning. It's like a stone or something. It's like unconscious. So that thing is Ramanuja's argument, that actually such a state of chinmatra doesn't exist really. It's just a theoretical concept. But the reason they get to that is because only Brahman exists. And therefore it cannot be conscious of anything, because nothing else exists.
Uttamadhikari almost accept on this Vasudevika Nilaya, this shelter, taking the shelter of Supreme, accept that, and all the qualities even present in the impersonation also.
Could be, yeah. Some people read the Uttama devotee, the primary quality, and they see everything in him, everything in the Lord in everything, and they'll take that as being like the Jnani. But it's obvious from the context that it can't be that, because he's Bhagavata, he's a devotee of the Lord, so how can he be that? So therefore the explanation given by the Acharyas is it's a vision and prema, that's all. And then he gives example of the gopis.
In the Gita, Samahatma Dosudurlabha, can we understand that this Bhagavatam mentioned here, can you compare that? Vasudevam Sarvamiti, one who understands Vasudev is...
What's that?
The Bhagavatam mentioned here can be compared to the Krishna's Gita, Samahatma Sudurlabha.
In general. Does the Uttamakari distinguish a material and spiritual world? Does the devotee depend on whether he's in the material as well? In one sense, no. I'm not even people who are not on that level don't really distinguish, and they pray whether I'm in heaven or hell, doesn't really matter. I don't long to be in the spiritual world. In other words, if we simply long to go to the spiritual world, then that is equivalent of salokya, which is a type of liberation. And the devotees don't even strive for that. So doing sadhana, we don't really distinguish that one is better than the other. The main thing is service to the Supreme Lord. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that this divine energy consisting of three modes is difficult to overcome. Why is material nature considered divine? Well, it's divine because, in the sense that it's ultimately under the control of the Lord, manifested by the Lord. It goes unmanifest by the Supreme Lord. It's His Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti of the Lord. So in that sense, it's divine. It's related to the Lord. It's not independent of the Lord. Not that it means it's fully spiritual and conscious. It doesn't mean that.
Sometimes a devotee may think, I am a Vaishnava. Is that also an attachment? If we see the pure devotees, Uttamadhikaris, they tell, I am not qualified to be a devotee.
Yeah, as I said, that the higher the devotee goes, the more humble he is. So therefore he thinks, I am the lowest, everyone else is more qualified than I am. That's his attitude.
Hare Krishna, any other questions? Just a small announcement. Today we will be marking the launch of raising funds for our master plan with a small scheme. The Krishna's property has to be secured with a boundary wall. So the temple management has decided that we'll start with the small scheme of 2,500 rupees for running feet. There are altogether 2,252 running feet available for the devotees to contribute. Just like Mother Yashoda bound Lord by her love and sincere efforts, devotees also can shed their love and sincere effort to secure the property of the Lord. And we have a few of the forms available here. Those who want to take the blessings of Guru Maharaj here can come forward and take the forms from his hand and just fill it up. Maharaj is randomly picking up the forms, the number of forms, whatever comes in hand, that many you can take up, the that much of blessings. I request our temple president Sumitra Krishna Prabhu come forward first and set an example. As many as it comes in his hand. Just take it, what it is. 2,500.
Two square feet is 5,000, three is 7,000. You can take one form and keep on increasing your.
It is for many, number of forms is for others to be given to others.
Also give your family members, friends.
Here comes the first collection, handed over to Guru Maharaj. Hari, Hari, Hari.